welcome back to the broadcast, my friends. We're going to get right into it tonight. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer on the RBN Network. We got kind of a packed show tonight, and we're going to get an update from Laurie Anderson, and then we're going to do the second half of the Vatican Secret Society's documentary, which is an outrageously excellent historical lesson and documentary on the overall how recent history in the last 100 to 200 years has been controlled by the Vatican and its operatives, and that as far as the executioner level power players go, you can be looking to the Jesuits in Rome. Yes, there are some Zionist bankers that I think are we can debate this, but I'm convinced that the power seat is still in Rome. They've been the Church of Rome, the Romans and their spinoffs, the Vatican henchmen, have been so skillful and successful and ruthless, skillful and successful at playing royal families off each other, using hitmen and assassination because they're ruthless to kill off the people who weren't playing ball with the globalist agenda. And through manipulation, and once again, when you're morally decrepit and willing to commit murder and theft to gain your agenda, then that gives you, unfortunately, it gives you a leg up on the rest of us who are trying to get through this life with some sense of moral righteousness and some type of respect for our fellow men and women that does not include, murder, rape, theft, stealing everything we can from nations, playing royal families off each other, fomenting, starting, funding, and initiating revolutions, which develop into movements that will fall right into the globalist agenda with the communists and dictators, global players right at the top, working with the Vatican Intelligence Agency, which manages the MI6, the Mossad, the Central Intelligence Agency, etc. With that, we're going to go to Laurie Anderson now, and then we'll get right into the documentary. So, Mike, go ahead and play what we... Yeah, right. That's what we got. That's what I said. We got a clip from Laurie. So let's get Laurie's expose on what's going on today, and then I'll have two or three more words in between her conclusion and the documentary. So go ahead, Mike. Go ahead and spin that. This is Laurie Anderson's update on Nevada trials.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're end of another day here at the federal courthouse in Las Vegas. I'm here with Gina Harden from California. So she's been reporting quite a while, and she's also came out to Camp Liberty when we were there in this summer. And so you'll have to look up her page, Jostle.
Liberty Grows.
Liberty Grows. So what was your take on the day?
We just witnessed a miracle in Judge Navarro's courtroom. The miracle that we've been praying for. The jury got to hear the truth. The jury got to hear the whole story, thanks to Clive and Bundy's attorney, Mr. Whipple. And it was great to watch. And, when the prosecution comes out and does their opening statement, the lawyers told me it's not an opening argument, you have to call it a statement.
Yeah.
And, and it always looks bad when you see these pictures of guns, but all they showed were screenshots. And, and they start with their timeline back in 1998 and these court orders. But Mr. Whipple came and put it all in context, showed the whole video, and made the government look like a bunch of liars when you see it in context. And he took it back to, 1850s?
Yes.
And told the story of the Old West and talked about,
he went right through the whole thing. He said, this is about natural resources, something we've been talking about all along, why does the government want the Bundys off? It's not about money. That was brought up multiple times. He said, this isn't about money. This is about the natural resources that this land holds, the water rights, which Clive and Bundy owns. And they've owned this, like she said, since 1877 to be exact. June 7th of 1877 is when the Bundy Ranch was founded. And this is a fact. This isn't hearsay. This is a fact, and it was brought out again in court today. And it came down to scientists. The water rights, the mineral rights, all this kind of stuff is what this is all about. The Desert Taurus from 1989 is when Clive and Bundy started being attacked. And yeah. So that's what it's all about.
Well, they talked about how the BLM was really just trying to put them out of business because they said, you know, oh, this poor tortoise is endangered. You can't have this many cattle out there. I think it went from like 150 down to 92. And he said, well, wait a minute. He said, I protest that because if I don't have my cattle out there, then I lose my water rights because you use it or lose it. That's the law. And his attorney was telling him, you can't let them do this. And so they actually got the state legislators to get involved the first time the government tried to impound the cattle. And the state legislatures went to the federal government and said, you can't do this. This isn't right. And they ceased their operation then.
Exactly. One saying I kind of liked, and I wrote it down in my notes, that was said is, alcohol is for drinking, water is for fighting. And that's what it's been about, is the water rights here. The one thing that was brought up is, why were there dump trucks? The contractors supposedly were cowboys, brought in horse trailers and tools to gather cows up. But there was dump trucks and backhoes and other things. What was in the back of some of these dump trucks? One of them was is water pipes that they had tore up, and they didn't have any warrants or any permission and any court order to tear down.
Right. This was all Clive and Bundy's labor. Yes. This was the labor over for generations of protecting this water from the Virgin River and the springs and bringing water to the desert so that the tortoises and the cattle and everything else can survive. And they were destroying his property and stealing his property, and there was no court order that allowed them to do this. And so this was this event, I think, on April 9th,
yes,
when Davy Bundy was out there. And they told the whole story. Ryan's coming home with his family from church, and he sees Davy out there in trouble with a bunch of officers. And the government had said, oh, you know, these Bundy boys were threatening and intimidating these officers. And so Whipple said, well, let's watch the video and you be the judge. And then you see, and this, you know, it's just like one of these police, it was from a police dash cam or something, and we're so used to seeing that all the time now. And he shows the video, and it was tense, but the tension was coming. The Bundys were surrounded by these officers, and then you see, it's kind of off to the side, you see Dave get tossed to the ground, and then they show the follow-up picture of the injuries to Dave Bundy's face. And
he was never charged with anything there. He was only arrested and detained, but never charged. 2 years after that fact, he was charged with other types of crimes, but nothing dealing with that incident there. So it was definitely a false arrest.
Yeah, and the Whipple really brought out how Cliven's been fighting this battle for decades, and he's always done so peacefully and lawfully.
Exactly. One thing I got brought up in this opening statements was that informants again. And what we've always wondered, and we wondered in the first trial up in Portland, about all the informants are there. Whipple claims that he's going to bring in some of these informants and show you that some of these people in the wash were not friendlies. They were informants, and this was all set up from the very beginning.
The government does them such a disservice to themselves when they show all these pictures of these scary guns, and then the defense gets up and shows the picture and says, well, you know what, that was actually an FBI informant, and there were more than a few. There were lots of them out there mingling with the unarmed women and children and other protesters.
Exactly. So the last couple of days with all these hearings, that's why we got such a blast off here, because a lot of things were allowed now because of all the motions and stuff we have been fighting for, such as the snipers got brought up in front of the jurors today.
Yeah.
And it was quite profound.
It was frightening to hear, as Whipple described to the jury, how the Bundy home was being surveilled, how Clive and Bundy, how they videotaped him talking on the telephone inside his home, how they were surrounded by snipers and they were in fear for their life. Something that they were not. I remember when in the last trial when Drexler talked about, I was afraid for my life, and the judge right away read some jury instructions telling them disregard that. He wasn't supposed to say that.
So we've got a better start on this trial than we had in the last two, because the last two, the prosecutors and the judge actually suppressed a lot of stuff that we needed the jurors to hear. And so far today, we have heard more stuff in this first day of opening statements from the prosecutors and the defense team than we did almost the whole trial last time, because all of this stuff was kept out of it.
Yeah, it was interesting how they talked about that the BLM and FBI were constantly doing threat assessments because they were so concerned about their own safety.
Yes, that was very interesting.
So Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of that stuff they brought out was stuff that was just recently discovered in the last couple of days.
We didn't know about the cameras. We didn't know about the surveillance stuff.
It reminded me so much of Ruby Ridge when they were talking about, you know, just how they were so afraid of these Bundys, you know,
yes.
and they were just, like, scaring, the officers were scaring themselves to death. And it was really interesting how Whipple pointed out that when Metro came, that Metro was helping the Bundys, that Brian actually rode with one of the Metro officers to the post, and that the Metro was actually pointing their guns at the federal agents and said, I can't imagine that there's any threat coming from the protesters.
Yes, exactly. Whipple made one statement. He said, being stressed is not a crime. It's their job. So
yeah.
it's, some of this stuff comes in the line of duty. It definitely, we don't want any violence at all. That's why all these people came. They were sick and tired of the violence that was being done to these people that was there, such as Margaret Houston being thrown to the ground, and the government lied about it. It says she actually jumped in front of the truck. When that video was shown today,
again,
she did not jump in front of that truck.
Yep. The Myrie said she was going in front of the car, and they threw her to the ground to save her and protect her. And then Whipple gets up and shows the video, and that car is coming by, and she's clearly on the side of the vehicle when he takes and throws
exactly.
her down.
So it was a great day for a beginning of this trial. I know there's a lot of more stuff going to come out. We still, tomorrow, we have Ryan Bundy's opening statements. We have Ryan Payne's and Ammon Bundy's. So we got a big day tomorrow. We might have our first witness that the government's going to bring in. We'll see about that. But it's awesome.
I think Ryan Bundy's going to do amazing tomorrow. I was so disappointed that he wasn't able to go today because I have to go home and won't be here tomorrow. But whoever wants to come and hear Ryan give his statement tomorrow, that's going to be incredible. So, you know, also they showed, you know, the government only likes to show pictures of guns, but Whipple brought out the pictures of people praying and,
yes.
you know, and so that was good too. And, we appreciate everyone praying. We felt it today, and it's just been so amazing to see Ryan Bundy walking around free, seeing him at lunchtime and different things. And so,
and his wife was here today to see him. I know she can't come in the courtroom because, she's a potential witness, but, at least she was here and she gets to see him. That's it was a good day all day today.
And it's always great when the courtroom is full. We had a full courtroom right on the other side of the camera. You can't see. There's a whole crowd of family and supporters that have been here and supporting these guys.
Yes.
So.
Well, Gina came all the way from California. She's been here a couple different times.
Appreciate my husband. He took his last vacation day to stay with the kids so I could be here.
Is this your last day too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you don't get to be here tomorrow. But.
No, I'll be home with everyone else glued to my phone.
Well, I'm glad you joined me today on
Thank
here.
You for
so
having
thanks
me.
For having me. I think Ken Rhodes, he came all the way from Michigan. He wants to say something real quick. I know his grandchildren watch him all the time on here. He's been involved from the very beginning also. But what do you have one to say here?
Well, I want to say all of you listening. John will never ask you for any money, but John does need gas money and stuff to get around. He don't need a lot of money, but he needs some. But if you're going to give some money, come back later and say, what's he doing with the money? He's stealing it. Then don't send your money. He don't need it. So all you trolls can go away. But if y'all can, please send John a few dollars if he gets a flat or needs a tire or anything, because he's doing plenty. Here.
Brandon, you want to blow that shofar? Hey, Brandon, maybe now would be a good time to explain the shofar, too. Because people ask what this shofar is all about. We've been hearing it since the Bundy Ranch. We heard it in Oregon during the trials there. But explain what this shofar is all about.
Well, you know, the Bible talks about the trump of God. There's a whole bunch of scriptures on it. My favorite is Numbers, chapter 10, verses 8 and 9.
Yeah.
And it was something that was always supposed to happen generation after generation.
I didn't realize
it was supposed to be for the priest of Aaron throughout all their generations of time. And somewhere along the lines, we lost it. People quit doing it. Well, maybe the Middle East, they still do it. But anyhow, Numbers chapter 10, verses 8 and 9. And my favorite part of there is it says we'll be delivered from our enemies. We blow the trumps, and that's my motivation.
This shofar here, if you look at it here, it's 48 inches all total.
Yeah, this one's
it's pretty big. It's not a small shofar. It came from Israel, right? Came all the way from Israel.
Yeah, the Sephardic priest made it. I ordered it. It was like 7 years ago, and then they do whatever they do. It's kosher.
Yes.
And then, of course...
Here's the update for the trial. That's perfect. Let's cap that one off right there. He's given a little history on the instrument that he's, the horn that he's blowing. That's not crucially essential right now. We got the update from the trial. It sounds like the witch's court is feeling the heat. And it's a combination of courtroom observers overflowing the courtroom, people calling and emailing. Don't stop the phone blitz and the email blitz. Don't just let silence envelop that courthouse. Send emails to the judge's clerk. Ask what's the judge's public email so I can send comment. And, it might get read by the judge. It might get read by an assistant or a clerk close enough. And those messages will get forwarded at least, hey, you got 40 emails today on the Bundy case. When there's stuff like that, or 400, better yet, that really makes a big difference, and I know because I've seen it happen. The witch's court will move, and it will cave, and it will bend, and it will eventually come close to doing something like the right thing if it's forced to do it by public pressure, but it has to be a lot of pressure. So don't give up. Get a hold of this judge. Keep the phone blitz up. Judges noticed. Believe me, one of the judges in our phone blitz noticed on the record, said something for the record, and said that he didn't feel threatened by it, which was huge because that kind of prevented the government from saying that courtroom observers' phone blitz is threatening and we're crazy and all this other stuff. It was very smart people saying very intelligent things, and he had nothing but positive things to say about at least the people who cared about the gentleman that we were calling for. So keep the phone calls coming. Keep the pressure up. Call the Vicar's office, Robert Stokig, S-T-O-E-K-I-G. That's Robert Stokig, the Vicar General for this area of Nevada. He's the big cheese. Him and the Archbishop could push the button to make this all go away. Of course, they're not just going to come out and overtly do that, but the word travels among the witches and the Nazis, so keep the pressure up. Now's the time to really bury them in phone calls and emails, etc. Before we go to the break, let's see. We got a break coming up in about 2 minutes. Then we're going to come back from the break, and I'm going to talk for about 5 minutes. Then we're going to take the bottom of the hour break at 10:30 Eastern, and then when we come back, I'm just going to say, hey, we're back, and here we go with the documentary, and we're off to the races with the Vatican Secret Societies and the New World Order conclusion, which I thought was an excellent documentary. It seemed to be a clear and present evil, I think, is what they were calling it a few years back, but they got it kind of up there on the Internet under a different name, and it's viewable. I was able to it's a really good documentary. It's well-researched. It gives a great overview of the big picture, how you see how these players have a multi-generational agenda. It transcends, generations, meaning it doesn't die off with the grandparents. It can be, the torch gets passed on to the children, the grandchildren, and it may not be their direct family. It may be protégés who are out of their bloodline, but people who will play ball. Never forget listening to Bill Bennett's Morning in America, and he and Peter King, who passed the Homeland Security bill, he was the big cheese on that. We're talking about war and how we need more war and more police state and more money for the military-industrial complex. And Peter King said, Bill, I know these arguments are difficult to make, but we have to use our Jesuit skills to do it. Came right out and said it. Bennett kind of snickered. Bill Bennett was the head of education under Reagan. He was a drug czar. Happy to call himself a czar in the free republic of the USA. Beautiful. So we're going to have a break coming up. We'll be back in a minute. I want to read the little piece that's in the news, and then we'll get to the documentary. Thanks, everybody, for listening. It's the Republic Broadcasting Network, not the Democracy Broadcasting Network, and it's Eric the Freedom Screamer. We'll be right back.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
That's Buddy Rich.
Hear my voice where you are. Take a train, steal a car, hop a freight, grab a star. Come back to me. Catch a plane, catch a breeze. On your hands, on your knees. Swim or fly, only please. Come back to me. On a mule and a jet, with your hair in a net or a towel wringing wet, I don't care. This is where you should be. From the hills, from the shore, ride the wind to my door. Turn highway to dust. Law if you must move the world only just come back to me. Come back to me. Come back to me.
Yeah. Woohoo! All right, Eric the Freedom Screamer here on the RBN Network. Thanks for joining us. We're gonna get right back into it. I got about 4 or 5 minutes. Then we're going to have a break, and then the documentary conclusion, Vatican Secret Societies and the New World Order. Dun, 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 dun. So what do you say when you call the witch's court out in Nevada in regard to the Bundys? I like to focus in on this. Was the first thing that came to my mind. When she was talking about whether Cliven and Ammon Bundy should be released, along with Ryan, whatever temporarily, hopefully permanently, but, you know, to go fight their own case and at least on their own recognizance to show up for trial and sentencing and then take it from there. No, she's holding them. And one of the things she said was, you've been showing a lack of respect for federal codes and statutes. Okay, number one, disrespect is not a crime. Number two, disrespecting an unlawful statute is never unlawful. And number three, disrespect of federal statutes and rules and regulations only applies to federal employees, which we and they are not. Okay? Real simple. And be firm and be polite, but lay it on the line. Okay. Oh, did y'all hear that the head of the FBI counterterrorism unit was found drunk in a hotel with a stripper who stole his gun and his Rolex. I kid you not. I'm trying to pull the article up here, and my screen just went white. So it looks like I am not going to be able to read that article, but let's see. I'll give you the Eric the Freedom Screamer's condensation of the article. Mr. Manson, M-A-N-S-O-N, the head of the FBI's counterterrorism unit for the Carolinas and the southwestern states, I believe, was at a training session down in the, I think it was North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken, and went out to a strip club with him and his FBI, top FBI buddies, picked up several strippers, took them back to the hotel where he passes out from an alcohol overdose, and Madame Stripper takes his 40 caliber Glock, his $6,000 Rolex, and $60 in cash, and splits the scene, baby. That's the type of piece of crap you have in the Federal Bureau of Idiots. And this is what happens when we let three-letter agencies and people get in positions of power like Trump, who refuse to do anything to try to liquidate the three-letter agencies. He's actually got the gall to get up and say, I'm a big supporter of the CIA and the FBI and all the police and bang heads, and we got to make America safe again. So let's have a giant nightmarish police state, and then not a one word. Dead, deafening silence. Lori, I know Lori was hoping Alex Jones would pick up the Uranium One evidence that we laid out on October 25th, which was stellar and beyond reproach and beyond, if there was justice, it would be an absolute indictment. You couldn't argue with any of the facts that Laz laid out. I refer you to the Republic broadcast of Resurrect the Republic on October 25th. I haven't heard a word about this, and I haven't heard a word about the Bundy trial. It's up to us. It's up to John Lamb. God bless all the people who are showing up for that courthouse. I mean, this is the trial of the century. The Bundy Ranch was laden with overflowing, over 1,000 militia people and patriots there. Why don't we have 1,000 people at the courthouse? It's easier to go to the courthouse unarmed and just observe than it is to get your gun cleaned out, take the risk of all the stuff that could happen with guns against guns, and go out there and camp out for days with binoculars and your sniper's rifle. I mean, please, this is easier than doing the duty at the ranch. Where's all the people that were there at the ranch, and we need to see them there at the courthouse? So I'm urging courtroom observers, please, bury the courthouse with bodies, if you can, ours, live ones. And if you can't be there, do it from the privacy of your home with your computer and your telephone. Make your voice heard. Let the witches court, the street Nazis, and the vicar general's office know that we know that the courts are corrupt and we want justice in our formerly free republic. We want our republic back now.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. We appreciate you being here. We have had technical difficulties uploading our archives, so people feel free to record this broadcast and post it everywhere you can. That is, record this broadcast, post it everywhere you can in the comment section, the link to this PDF file, anywhere you can. We'll see you tomorrow.
In November of 1863, show us that the president was not looking for further reprisals or punishments against the South. However, Rome and the Holy Alliance wanted no amnesty for the South. And going back to the hated Constitution with states' rights and freedoms derived from the Bible, Lincoln had served his purpose. It was time for his removal.
Lincoln was a useful tool, thinking he was actually saving the Union, because he wanted to restore the Southern states on the same footing they had left the Union, which would have frustrated the purposes of the Jesuit order by making a consolidated empire out of all the states.
To ensure total chaos, the Jesuits decided Lincoln would not be the only target.
So they came up with this plan to assassinate not just Abraham Lincoln, but the entire government.
The South had lost the Civil War, so they were going to take out Abraham Lincoln, Vice President Andrew Johnson, the head of the Northern Army, Ulysses S. Grant, and the Secretary of the State, William Seward, all in one night.
On April 14th, 1865, only 5 days after Lee's surrender, the conspirators struck. Abraham Lincoln was shot while watching a play at Ford's Theater. He died the next morning, April 15th, at 7:22 a.m. Secretary of State Seward was attacked at his home. The assassin, Louis Payne, repeatedly stabbed Seward and escaped. Miraculously, Seward recovered from his wounds. Vice President Johnson's assassin, George Axelrod, lost his nerve at the last minute and fled the scene. And General Grant avoided his assassin by leaving town earlier in the day to check on a sick friend. But who were these assassins? Most people know about John Wilkes Booth, the man who pulled the trigger and killed Lincoln, but few realize that most of the conspirators were Roman Catholic. Even Booth had converted to Catholicism.
it's clear that John Wilkes Booth, while he was a member of the Knights of the Golden Circle, at the time he was plotting Lincoln's assassination, he was also meeting in the home of a very devout Roman Catholic woman by the name of Mary Surratt, right in Washington, D.C. And it was in her home that the plot to kill Lincoln was hatched.
The Jesuits of Washington, D.C. put together the plot for the assassination. The Jesuit of power behind that plot was Bernardine F. Wiget.
Jesuits under the stream of an induction, they were not directly to be involved. They only were the elements, the intellectual element that will prepare this. The case of Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, the president, was killed by the Jesuits of Rome, but there was no Jesuit there involved directly. Nevertheless, was the Jesuit who prepared the plot against his life and prepared and trained those who were to kill him.
They arranged it.
Yes.
To be sure, the assassins were also Southerners, but they were first and foremost Jesuit assassins and agents of the foreign dictator called the Pope. Among the conspirators was Mary Surratt's son, John Surratt. His tale leads to the very doors of the papal palace in Rome.
Four of them were eventually hung, and the rest were sent to prison for various lengths of time. Booth was killed in a barn, but the story around Surratt is absolutely amazing. Surratt, after the assassination, John Surratt escaped to Canada. Now, the southern government had a kitchen cabinet based in Montreal. So that's the first place he went, was to Montreal. And who's in Montreal to meet this Surratt was two priests. And they squirreled him away for about 6 months. At the same time, the government is looking all over for this guy. It's like the biggest manhunt in U.S. history. And they can't find him. And here he is sitting in a little town outside of Montreal, being protected by priests.
The Jesuits were behind this assassination. They controlled Surratt. Surratt called time outside of Ford's Theater. John Wilkes Booth does the shooting. The guard, the Secret Service guard, who's supposing to be guarding the entranceway to the booth of Lincoln, he just happens to leave his post. And he's never punished for it. So the assassination takes place. Surratt escapes to Canada. He's taken to Liverpool. He's taken from there to Rome. He enlists in the Pope's Zouave Army. And in 1867, he's discovered through another Roman Catholic who reveals the truth about it. And he is then brought back to the United States and put on trial. He has two trials. And because Roman Catholics have more allegiance to their priests and the canon law than they do our country, when a Roman Catholic's on a jury, they can hang a jury and let the murderer go free, and that's exactly what happened to John Surratt.
As a result of the Surratt affair and the papal policy of not allowing Protestant churches within the city of Rome, the United States of America ended diplomatic relations with the Vatican in 1867. But even with the end of diplomatic relations with the U.S., the Jesuits had achieved a great victory. First, hundreds of thousands of Protestants were dead. Second, much of the Protestant South lay in ruins. Third, forcing the South at gunpoint to stay in the Union had dealt a severe blow to the Constitution and the concept of freedom. And lastly, Lincoln was dead, and the Jesuits were avenged for his interference in the Chiniqui trial and his attempt to restore the Republic to its pre-war state. Adding insult to this situation, the Jesuit-controlled radical Republicans in Congress, men like Charles Sumner and Thaddeus Stevens, were able to pass the 14th Amendment in 1868. The 14th Amendment created a new type of citizen, a citizen of the United States, whereas before a man was a citizen of the state in which he was born. Citizenship was now at the national level. Ostensibly, this new citizenship was created to help the freed slaves. But in reality, it was a measure that would allow the federal government to strip away constitutional rights from the people and replace those rights with privileges granted by the government.
In Maxwell versus Dow of 1899, the Supreme Court said that none of the Bill of Rights are privileges and immunities of 14th Amendment U.S. citizenship. And the Great Dissent by John Marshall Harlan, the first Harlan, must be read by every viewer as he goes out of his chair to say that we don't enjoy real liberty. That our rights of American freemen have been overthrown. That our Anglo-Saxon liberties are gone. And then he reiterates in 1908 in Twining versus New Jersey, when Twining versus New Jersey comes out and says the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, the Third Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the Seventh Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, none of those amendments are privileges and immunities of United States citizenship under the 14th Amendment. That's why in court you take your Fifth Amendment privilege. That's why you own a gun with a privilege. That's why you worship God now by a privilege granted from Washington. This ought to make us irate. All we have is Soviet citizenship, but all of us are. Whites and blacks were all slaves of the Jesuits in Washington, D.C., and we none of us have any absolute rights to limit the powers of Washington. The only thing that limits Washington's powers is the decisions of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's controlled by the Jesuits of Georgetown. You got five Roman Catholics sitting on it now.
But why was it so important to the Jesuits to create a nation? In his book, A Constitutional View of the Law of the Late War Between the States, Alexander Stevens tells us why.
In Volume 2, Alexander Stevens tells us on page 650 the real reason of the 14th Amendment. Quote, consolidation and empire. That's the purpose of the amendment. Consolidation of the states and empire. That's why I call it the Pope's Holy Roman 14th Amendment, corporate fascist, socialist, communist empire created by this 14th Amendment. He goes on and says, they have not as yet openly denied the federative character of the government. However, in direct war upon its principles, their acts have been covertly aimed. This is an exceedingly important fact to be specifically noted and kept in mind. These monstrous reconstruction measures, with all their enormities and fatal tendencies, towards ultimate complete centralism and empire are still based upon the assumption that the states, as separate integral parts, constitute members of what is still, in words at least, acknowledged to be a federal union. All these bold usurpations of power are, upon their face, nothing but resorts to induce or to compel under duress the peoples of the several southern states to go through the forms of adopting the 14th Amendment as an additional article to the Constitution. So, he then concludes, no system of representative government can be long maintained by any people who have not the intelligence to understand it, the patriotism to approve it, and the virtue to maintain inviolate both its form and principles as established. So this is the reason for the 14th Amendment, consolidation and empire. And this is what Andrew Johnson understood was the purpose, and so he campaigned against it. And he called Lee a hero if that was the real reason for this war, to keep this consolidation and empire from being formed. The 14th Amendment was proclaimed ratified on July 28, 1868. That was the end of the Washington's Republic as established in 1787. So our white Anglo-Saxon Protestant and Baptist Calvinist Federal Republic of these United States lasted from 1787 to 1868. And a new nation was established in 1868, and that is called the American Empire in my book, and it has existed from 1868 to the present. And it is squarely in the hands of the papacy for two reasons. For destroying heretics, liberals, perfidious Jews, and infidel Muslims and Buddhists over the last 100 years since the Spanish-American War, or since really the Indian War of the Great Plains. The War of the Great Plains from 1860 to 1890 was the annihilation of the Native American Indians so that they could build an empire from sea to shining sea. A terrible crime. And it was all led by a Roman Catholic Army general named Philip Sheridan, who was advised by the America's most powerful Western Jesuit at the time, Pierre de Schmitt, and it was this Philip Sheridan who said, the only good Indian is a dead Indian.
With the 14th Amendment, the Constitution of the Founding Fathers was tossed into the dustbin of history, and centralization of power in Washington, D.C. was well underway. Now the American Empire could begin in earnest. The American states, both in the North and South, would be subservient to the federal government and would be essentially slaves to this new master. In rapid succession, the United States found itself in one war after another. The Spanish-American War, World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Cold War, Gulf War I, Gulf War II, and a host of smaller police actions, such as in Somalia, Bosnia, Afghanistan, and Libya. Looking over the last 150 years, one can discern the influence of the Jesuits in the initiation of these wars and conflicts for the purpose of building a world empire under their control. Early in the 20th century, the Jesuits were determined to start a new European war.
Germany expelled the Jesuits in 1872. Russia had expelled the Jesuits in 1820. France had expelled the Jesuits in 1880. Britain had formally, although not in actuality, had formally expelled the Jesuits in 1829. Every country in Europe, Switzerland, 1848, every country in Europe had expelled the Jesuits except Belgium. And so the Jesuits said, well, now we're going to have to punish these people because they obviously didn't learn the lesson with Napoleon Bonaparte. So what we're going to do is we're going to use Britain and we're going to use America, and we're going to have a second 30 years war. The first one was from 1618 to 1648. The second one's going to be from 1914 to 1945. We're going to have World War I. We're going to have the Bolshevik Revolution. We're going to have the Spanish Civil War. We're going to have World War II. We're going to just have continual war for 30 years, and we're going to control all the factions. We're going to control the Allies, and we're going to control the Axis.
The assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand was the spark that ignited the First World War. Archduke Franz Ferdinand was the heir apparent to the Austro-Hungarian throne. His inclusive policy towards the Slavic peoples and lenient treatment of Orthodox Christian Serbia made him unacceptable to Rome. He therefore could not be allowed to rule. The assassination was set for July 26, 1914. Since the year 1054, the Catholic Church has been waging war against Orthodox Christians. The Orthodox Christians did not accept the supremacy of the Pope. A war involving the major powers of Europe would be a perfect opportunity to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Orthodox Serbs and Russians killed. Afterwards, Rome would be in a better position to dominate these countries. Who shot the Archduke? Gavrilo Princip, a member of the secret society called the Black Hand. The Black Hand was founded by Freemasons. During the trial, Princip testified that his colleague, Zaganovich, told me he was a Freemason, and on another occasion told me that the heir apparent, Franz Ferdinand, had been condemned to death by a Freemason's lodge. Even though a Masonic group carried out the murder, all of Serbia was blamed. It was never pointed out at that time that the assassins were linked to Freemasonry, and that its upper levels had been under the control of the Jesuits for nearly a century. After World War I, a movement was put in motion to have a world government that would help the nations of the world live in peace. A peace controlled by the Jesuits. When this world government, or League of Nations, failed to materialize, the Jesuits pushed forward plans to create a second world war. Even before the end of World War I, the Jesuits had set in motion a plan to bring the Russian Orthodox Christians back into the fold of the Pope's control. Under the direction of their superior general, Vladimir Levchovsky, the Jesuits instigated the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917. This revolution brought communism to Russia. The Jesuits had been thrown out of Russia over 100 years earlier, but now the leader of the Bolsheviks, Vladimir Lenin, admitted the Jesuits back into Russia in 1922. Lenin proved fickle and showed signs of disloyalty to the Jesuits. For this, he was poisoned, and his replacement, Joseph Stalin, was ready to carry on with the Vatican's bidding. As a boy, Stalin had obtained a scholarship to attend Tiflis Theological Seminary. Openly, the school was Orthodox Christianity, but behind the scene, it was run by the Jesuits. In 1931, Stalin was interviewed by Emil Ludwig. Ludwig, do you not admit that the Jesuits have good points? Stalin, yes, they are systematic and persevering in working to achieve sordid ends, but their principal method is spying, prying, worming their way into people's souls and outraging their feelings. Once in power, Stalin killed millions of people, both Jews and Orthodox Christians. He killed anyone who would resist the new Soviet state he created based on Marxism. What many failed to understand was that Marxism was based on the Jesuit slave plantations, or reducciones, in South America, and Sir Thomas More's book, Utopia.
What the Jesuits did was, is they were the masters of communism. Communism originates with the Roman Catholic traitor, whose name was Sir Thomas More. Sir Thomas More betrayed King Henry VIII, gave his full allegiance to the Pope, and for which reason Thomas More was executed as a traitor, holding forth the Pope's temporal power over his allegiance to his king. Sir Thomas More is the author of Utopia. Utopia is the foundation for communism. So communism is Romanism. In fact, the orders, the many communities of the Roman Catholic institution, the Jesuit order, the Redemptorist, that goes on, they run on communist principles of universal equality. Communis is the Latin term. So therefore, communism is a brainchild of the Jesuits, but it has been made to look Jewish through implementing it through Marx and his Communist Manifesto, financed also by another Masonic British Freemason, Engels.
Besides establishing communism in Russia after World War I, the Jesuits sought to reestablish the Pope's physical kingdom that had been taken from him in 1871. On June 7, 1929, the Lateran Treaty was ratified, which reestablished the Pope's domain called Vatican City. The new Prime Minister of Italy, Benito Mussolini, was instrumental in bringing about the treaty. The treaty occurred only a few months before the economic crash that started in America and quickly spread around the world, called the Great Depression.
Approximately $90 million worth of gold in lira, I think it was about a billion worth of lira, something like that, was given to the papacy by the Italian government. So for reparations, for lack of a better word, because that we had been suppressed from 1870 to 1929, you owe us all this money. So, Benito Mussolini enslaves the Italian Catholic people, makes them pay this huge sum, which they didn't want to pay. And what does the papacy do with this money? Well, this treaty's in about February or March. In October, the Jesuits crashed the American stock market, and they used their number one short seller, the Irish Roman Catholic, Joseph P. Kennedy, to do it. So they sell short, the margin calls can't be met, the stock market crashes, and what happens? The Vatican takes their millions of dollars that they got from Mussolini, and they invest it in all the corporations and businesses that are busted on Wall Street, and they buy it all for pennies. So by the time Wall Street comes back into power, the Archbishop of New York completely controls all the major corporations in this country.
As banks began to fail, the Federal Reserve did not act to pump money into the system, which it should have done had those in control of it wanted to keep the banks afloat. As the chaos lingered and many lost their jobs and were driven into poverty, the Jesuits created a dictatorship out of the office of the President of the United States. In March 1933, the new president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, signed into law a state of national emergency. Under such a state of emergency, the Constitution was set aside, ostensibly for the public good, until the emergency was canceled by the president. Roosevelt never canceled the emergency. This was verified in 1973 by the Church Matthias Committee and published in Senate Report 93-549. No American president since then has canceled the emergency. And even though Congress passed the National Emergency Termination Act in 1974, this termination was in name only. The reality was that the emergency powers taken were never returned. They continued in the U.S. Code as permanent powers. Thus, we are currently in a state of emergency or dictatorship. It should also be noted that Roosevelt was a 32nd degree Freemason. FDR was obliged to follow the orders of the head of this secret society. His oath to Freemasonry superseded his oath to the U.S. Constitution. And as we have seen, the man in control of Freemasonry was the Jesuit Superior General. In Germany, the Vatican had in place Adolf Hitler. It is usually not emphasized, but Hitler was a Roman Catholic. Hitler praised the Roman Catholic Church, saying that, "Until now, there has never been anything more grandiose on the earth than the hierarchical organization of the Catholic Church." Heinrich Himmler, Hitler's head of the SS, was also a Roman Catholic. Friedrich Hoffet wrote, "Hitler, Goebbels, Himmler, and most members of the party's old guard were Catholics." After the war, Walter Schellenberg, former head of German counter-espionage, stated, "The SS organization had been constituted by Himmler according to the principles of the Jesuit order." Himmler's title as supreme commander of the SS was to be the equivalent of the Jesuits' general. Incredibly, although he killed and tortured millions, the Vatican never excommunicated Hitler. In fact, not one of the mass murderers of the Third Reich was ever excommunicated by the Vatican. The day Hitler died, the Spanish dictator Franco, also a Roman Catholic, had this statement run in the publication Reforma. "Adolf Hitler, son of the Catholic Church, died while defending Christianity." As a loyal son, Hitler killed heretics, including Protestants, Jews, Orthodox Christians, and even liberal Catholics. All told, the war dead numbered between 62 to 78 million people. 11 million of the total dead from World War II died in concentration camps, 6 million being Jews. The Jewish Holocaust was never condemned by Pope Pius XII, or for that matter, by any other pope. Why this silence? The Jews, like all heretics, resisted conversion to Roman Catholicism and obedience to the Pope. Who financed Hitler? The answer is clear and easily verified. The Vatican and many of the wealthy elite in the West gave Hitler the money he needed to build the Third Reich. As early as 1919, Archbishop Eugenio Pacelli met a young Adolf Hitler in Munich. The meeting occurred at night while all the household was asleep, except for the nun who attended Archbishop Pacelli. Her name was Pascalina. According to Pascalina, Hitler told Pacelli that he was out to check the spread of aesthetic communism in Munich and elsewhere. It did not come as a surprise to her, therefore, in light of Pacelli's hatred of the Reds, to see the prelate present Hitler with a large cache of church money to aid the rising revolutionary and his small struggling band of anti-communists. "Go, quell the devil's work. Help spread the love of Almighty God," Pacelli told Hitler. "For the love of Almighty God," she heard the young man, Adolf Hitler, reply. Money for this young revolutionary also came from industrialists in the West.
Hitler's rise to power was financed by London and New York and Berlin. They were the Knights of Malta running the banking.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.